Picture this. Your best friend and secret crush tells you he's getting married and asks you to be his best man. You are devastated. In order to navigate the chaos of the wedding, you accept your Indian family's relentless matchmaking efforts and meet a potential match. A no-nonsense engineer who's also trying to avoid the numerous setups from his family. The twist, to try to outsmart all the drama, these two hatch a plan to fake an engagement. But is the chemistry between them actually real? Are you intrigued? Well,
Yes.
so are we. So get ready to be charmed and intrigued by this unique tale of love, laughter, and cleverly concocted plans written by the wonderfully talented Naina Kumar, author of the upcoming, or actually, it came out already, debut novel, Say You'll Be Mine. So without further ado, we are delighted to introduce Naina to our podcast. Welcome, Naina. Thank you so
Thank
much
you
for
for coming
coming on.
on.
Thank you. That was such a nice introduction. Thank you so much. So nice to be
Totally
here.
worthy.
Oh my gosh, your book is
Thank
so good. So, yes.
Would you like to say a little bit more about yourself to our listeners?
Sure. I'm Naina. I live in Texas. I'm a lawyer. And I've been writing on the side for a little bit. I love romance and rom-com, so that's what I wrote. And this is my first book.
Yay, that's good. We have some friends who live in Texas right now, and you are in a deep freeze. Are you in that part?
It's warmed up.
Oh,
We did
good.
hit a deep freeze for like everything was shut down on Monday, Tuesday.
Oh.
But things are back up. We were like in the 70s on Thursday, so we're
Oh.
back to normal here.
Okay, good.
That's
Glad to
good.
hear. Glad to hear. So, with all our authors, we like to go a little bit into your decisions to write. So we would love to know, like, how old were you when you figured out that this was something that you wanted to do, or what led you to a writing career?
Yeah, I like don't remember a time when I didn't want to write. So I was thinking about, I think my mom still has this save somewhere. Like the first book I ever wrote was a picture book. I was like 6 or 7 years old, and I had like taped the construction paper together to make it look like a book. And I was just always trying to write the kinds of books that I was reading at the time. So in middle school, I was trying to write middle grade, and in YA, and high school, I was writing some YA. And but I never really got far. Like I could write a couple, truly like only a couple thousand words, and then I'd give up. And I don't know if it was the timing or if I just it wasn't clicking, but this book is the first one I ever finished. And it only happened in, I started writing it in 2021. And so it just took, I don't know if it was timing or I was just in a good place in my career and I felt ready to do this, or if it was just the idea. Part of it, I think, is because this is the first time I tried to write a romance, which is the genre I've always loved the most. So I think it maybe was that. But yeah, I think, yeah, this was the first one.
So how did the idea come about?
So I was living at home with my parents during the pandemic, during this part, when I started writing this book. I was working remotely for the first time and didn't want to be by myself in my apartment. And so I came back home, worked from here, and I realized, I mean, I had so much free time in the evenings. Like we weren't my social life was cut to zero. So I was reading a lot and I decided, I've always wanted to write. I've never been able to finish a book. My goal for that year was just let's finish something. And the idea came, my parents are lovely, but they've been trying to do some matchmaking. Like that's a very real thing that's happened for me. And these questions about how do we find love and what does matchmaking look like in the modern world? Like my parents had an arranged marriage and they're very happy, but they did that back in India. Things are really different here. And so like thinking about how does that process work here? Could it work here? Those are all the questions that were in my mind. And so they kind of just came out on the page and exploring, sometimes parental pressure is so much, like maybe you would just pretend to be engaged to get away from all of it. And that's where it really, the idea for this book came from.
Wow.
I love that. Now, you're a lawyer, so obviously you went to school for a law school. Like, were you taking creative writing classes at the time? Like, how were you writing while you were in college?
I did take one creative writing class in college. It was a short story class and was very literary, and it was not for me. And I gave up on writing for a while after it, just because I was not. I just assumed because I couldn't do that, like literary style short stories, I just wasn't meant to write. So I didn't write for a really long time. During law school, I would write a lot of like short poems or short things just as a creative outlet. But I was never really. I had story ideas, but I never sat down to really try them until 2021, really.
Wow, that's
So
great.
in the book, one of the main characters has a critique partner who
Yeah.
they bounce ideas off of. Do you have a critique partner or a critique group that you work with?
I do. And I actually found my critique partners after I wrote the first draft of this book. So the character in the novel is not based on anybody I ever knew. But I have some really close critique partners that I've made along the way that I found pretty much after I had a first draft. I met a lot of other people who also had first drafts, and we kind of connected through, I think we were applying for the same mentorship programs.
Okay.
So there was like, I think Pitch Wars was over, but I had applied for like Author Mentor Match and something else. And we just found each other that way. And we've stayed friends ever since. And they flew out, my critique partners flew out for my launch, which was very sweet.
You know, it's funny because it's so magical when you can find people that mesh with you and who like your books and you like their books. And I mean, it's a partnership. Well, as Christine knows. So, but it is. I mean, you find people and it's just, and you can just be friends forever. Like we, Christy and I, unfortunately, we've never met in person, but we've known each other for 10 years now, and it's based on our books. So
yeah,
it's wonderful that you're able to find that with some other people too.
I love that.
It's such a, like a special friendship, a special relationship when you can trust someone that much and be that vulnerable with them with your writing. Yeah,
that's I agree. Because your writing
is like a vulnerable, sorry.
Oh, it is. No, that's exactly what I was about to say, Angie. Yeah, like it's your baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it totally is.
And it's all those internal thoughts too. I mean, it's those things that you don't often share with other people, except when you're writing, like you're putting it on a page and then it's for everyone to see.
That's right.
But yeah, it takes a lot of courage to do that.
The life of an artist, huh? Now, you said that beforehand you were writing, but not romance. So what were you writing?
I was writing, so I think I was like in high school, I was trying to write like a lot of YA and in college too. But again, it didn't get far. I would outline an idea and like write a couple thousand words and then be like, well, this is nothing. And then kind of toss it. And I think in college, I also tried to write a thriller, which I don't know why. I wasn't reading thrillers at the time, but I was like, I was trying to do everything but romance, which I don't know exactly why. Like I was reading a minimum of 2 romance novels a week, sometimes more, like all through college and law school. I read so much romance and I still do. Like I read so much romance. And I don't know why I was just like, I can't do that. Like I had some kind of mental block. And then, but once I started it, that it just made sense.
Yeah. So it's like you found your voice and you found where you fit in and,
yeah.
And then it made it easy. So was it pretty easy to actually finish this book?
I mean, I feel like you kind of forget about some of the pain, like after, like in childbirth or something, like you forget like how tough the whole thing was, like once you're on the other side. I mean, it was hard. Like it was the first time I'd ever tried to do it. So it was hard, but it wasn't like as hard as I had thought it would be, I think. And maybe it's because like I wanted to know how this story ended. So I was motivated the whole way through. Like I was like, I need to know what happens and I need to know how they end up.
So that's one of the things that we often ask is, are you a pantser or are you a plotter? Because like pantsers, like I don't know how it's going to end. And it's kind of a surprise at the end. So which one are you?
So I'm surprisingly a plotter, but I still don't know how it's going to end. Like I think I plot a lot, but I'm also open to things changing. So I'm maybe in between. I think of myself as a plotter, but there are times when the story does like something will happen and I rework it and then I go back in. But like this one, like I knew that they were, I mean, it's a romance, so it's not a spoiler that things end up happy and they end up so like I knew, I wanted to see how, like I was like, how am I gonna get them? Like I know what I want to happen, but I want to see it. I want to see it all play out. And so, yeah, I'm definitely more of a plotter. I love a beachy. I love structure. It's just kind of the way my brain works, but yeah.
Oh, a girl after my own heart.
Between us, Christy.
You're a plotter too, yeah.
Yeah, the times that I don't plot is, it's getting really messy because it goes all over the place except where it's supposed to go. So yeah, plotting is the way to go. But I agree with what you're saying though. Like if there's a change or if you see that there should be a change, it's nice to be able to let go of that outline or rework the outline or whatever. So it's kind of neat. But does that mean that when you outlined the first time, you didn't know how it was going to end, or?
I knew the very ending, but I didn't know like the third act, like that whole chunk was pretty blurry. And even the middle was a little blurry. So I knew the beginning and I knew the ending. And I had a very vague outline for the middle.
Love it.
Yeah. And I also didn't really know how to outline. Like I didn't know what, I think I found out what beats were about halfway through drafting.
Got it.
So I did that. I like went back in and was like, okay, let's fix some of it. It also helped me flesh out the middle. Cause I was like, I don't know what's supposed to happen in the middle. But yeah, I think my outlining has gotten a little better since then, but my third act is usually a blur. Like even the next project I'm thinking of, it's very detailed in the beginning and very detailed in the ending, but there's like a big chunk that I still haven't really figured out.
Yeah, that's really cool. I actually like that, because when you are writing, it's kind of nice to have some surprises. So
yeah.
And I like the idea of being able to outline it. Like I do, it does draw me. It really does. And even though I keep failing at it, I keep trying.
I think there's such a magic to pantsing that, like, it's so like, I almost wish I could do that, like discover the story through the words. I just know that I'd never finish. Like, yeah. I wouldn't finish if I did it that way. But I think that there's something like really organic and magical about that process too.
I agree 100%. And it's nice to do the side stories too. But I think that if I didn't outline them, that's all I would do is just the little side stories.
So you write them fun too, yeah.
They are fun, except when you go to 200,000 words and you still don't have a story. So you finish this book and now you have a draft. Do you send it? Do you have critique partners at that point? Or do you have a best friend that you send it to? Or do you, how many edit rounds did you go through?
Several. So in the very beginning, only my sister read the book. I didn't have any critique partners. I just had a messy first draft and my sister, who was very kind and gave me some feedback. But then I started to, I didn't know what to do with this first draft. I didn't know how to revise. So I started looking at these mentorship programs, and I applied for one and did not get selected. But through it, I met several other writers who also had first drafts and who also didn't know what they wanted to do with them. So we kind of exchanged them. We started revising. And then there was another program called RevPit that I submitted to and got selected.
Nice.
Really helped me a lot. Like, how it really taught me how to revise. I was able to work with an editor who was volunteering their time for this mentorship program, and like really learned how to revise with her. And then after that, I just started querying. But I think I did like two or three big rounds of revision the course of it before querying.
That's great, actually.
And then you had to learn how to write a query letter.
You had to learn to write a query letter. Not fun. I do not like query letters. I don't like synopses. Those are the worst.
They're a different world altogether. And for somebody who like likes to say words, to limit yourself to 250 sometimes can be very, very challenging.
And then finding the exact, you know, the right hook, you know, what is the right hook? And it could be many different things, but you have to find the one that really just grabs the agent and grabs them. It's such a challenge. And it's a skill too. I mean, the more you do it, really, the better you get at it. And so,
yeah. And I think there are some authors who are just so talented at doing the query letter. I mean, that's really how I got my query letter in shape. Was I drafted something that was horrible, and then I sent it around to friends. And one of our friends had a very good reputation for revising query letters, and she really knocked it out of the park. She did a really helpful job with it. So that's really what helps me get it much better than my original version.
Yeah, it definitely helps. If you have people that you can send your query letter to get some ideas and tips on how to write it, it really does help. It really does.
Or sending it to somebody who doesn't know anything about your book, because they should be able to figure out what your book is about after. So it's kind of nice to show it to people who have no idea what you're writing. So it's kind of good. But so then you send, okay, I'm going to do this, not just because a lot of people are querying out there. It's getting harder and harder to find an agent. So how many query letters did you send, and how did that go?
Yeah. I don't know what the total number was. Maybe 30.
That's not bad. Yeah, that's very good.
I think I got really lucky with this book. I had a 6-week querying period. So I wasn't sending that many out. Like, I think I sent maybe, after I got my first offer, I sent a bunch more out. But, you know, or like once I got the call for like, then I sent a bunch more out, and then I had the offer. So I think like total, it ended up going to maybe 30 to 40 people.
Nice.
I really like my agent. I got really fortunate with where I ended up.
It feels like everything clicked for you. So that's fantastic.
Well, reading the book, I can say I know why. Like, anyone who didn't choose that book, you know, I know they're going to regret it.
Thank you. It's so kind. Yeah.
It's so good. I'm going to say that many times.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I was just gushing again.
I do think that, like, you know, it's nice to have like a book you feel proud of and you feel like you've got your query materials in good shape, but I don't want to discount that there's also luck involved. And like, I hear a lot, like, you know, just be prepared to get lucky, like prepare all of your things. But like, if it's not happening, I really don't think that has anything to do with merit. I really think luck is just a part of it. And you, but the best we can do is just prepare for the luck to happen. And I think that's kind of, I feel like that's what happened here. And I'm really thankful for the agents who did offer on it.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's just not the right time. You know, it couldn't, it is nothing to do with your book. It just, it's not the right time for that particular story. And, you know, and sometimes there are things you can do to make it better and maybe go out and try again. And, but sometimes it's just, you have to put it aside for a while and then revisit it when that particular subject is in fashion again, like vampires, like,
And I don't feel like there's anything wrong with writing a book and then putting it away, because every book that you write is a learning curve. And I'm sure for you is every time that you started a book and only wrote 2,000 words, let's say, that was like you were learning something that time, you know, like every single time that we put words to page.
I really don't believe anything is ever a waste. Like we're always growing and learning. And I mean, I'm sure you guys know authors too, who their shelved books ended up becoming, you know, their book two or a book down the line that they came back to. So like nothing's ever gone for good. I don't think.
Right. Yeah. And those ideas, I mean, you still had those ideas and maybe someday those ideas will come back out, maybe in a different form. A germ of the plot is still valid. You know, it's still something you may want to revisit. So yeah, but that's pretty cool though, that you're, I'm sorry, I'm gushing and starting.
So what happens after, so the book comes out and now you're going to be writing another book. What are you working on now? What's going on with you right now?
Yeah, so I'm going to start doing edits on book two. My editor just gave me her edit letter a week ago. So I'm about to dive back into revisions on book two. And I can share a little bit about book two. There's a sneak peek of it at the end of book one. Okay. And so I can talk about it. Book two is a standalone and it is about a couple who they got married about like 7 years ago and they tried to make a go of the marriage and then separated. So they've been estranged for about 7 years and she's ready to move on. She's ready to get a divorce. They've kind of been dragging their feet on this for a while, living separate lives, but he's not signing off on the divorce papers. So she goes down to her hometown of Houston, which is where I'm from. She goes down to Houston to get him to sign off on the divorce papers. But when she gets there, a hurricane has just changed course in the Gulf of Mexico and is headed straight for them. So they end up trapped together in the house to ride out the storm and maybe also fall back in love.
Love that trope.
It was kind of like my take on a snowed in romance, just because we don't get snow in Texas. I have been through a number of hurricanes and have been trapped with my family in the house.
Oh my so God. With the flooding and everything. I mean, you can put them in some perilous situations too.
Yeah. They definitely, I mean, they have to deal with a lot together and, it just seems like kind of a fun idea, you know, going through a high stress situation and you see the worst in each other, but you also see the best in these moments. Mm-hmm. You see the way people really like, having gone through hurricanes in Houston, like you see people become their best selves to help each other out, to, you know, people lose their homes and people will bring them in, shelter them. You see like the best and worst of people. And it was a fun book, right? And I'm excited. I'm really excited actually to go back and revise it.
Oh, that's very good. Sweet. Oh, speaking of revise, like, so what's harder for you? Is it writing the first draft or is it revising? Like how does
drafting is like pulling teeth for me. Like I really, and I, there are times I enjoy it, but I really, if I didn't set a specific time every day to sit and draft, like I would never do it. I don't enjoy it that much. I love revising.
Okay. So like, let's get into that because you have a full-time job. So how does that all work out for you? Like, how do you find time? When do you find time? Do you work in snippets or in long periods of time? How does that all work?
Yeah. So I try to do, it takes me a while to get in the right headspace. So I have to do a pretty big chunk of time. I do like a 2-hour chunk in the evenings.
Got it.
So I'll usually finish work by 5, go take my dog for a walk, go make dinner, all that stuff. And then around 8 to 10, I try to settle in and just be like, this is all we're doing today for this chunk. And then weekends I'll do like a whole afternoon, I'll block out or something. And that helps. But if I don't set that time aside, then nothing will happen.
No.
Absolutely. So after you finish the book, do you let it sit for a while before you start editing?
I think the longer I let it sit, the better. I feel like I need some distance from it in order to edit it properly. That's usually a period when I will send to like my first round critique partners. So I'll tell them like, don't send this back to me for like a month. Like just keep it with you, your thoughts with you, and then tell me because I'm not going to be ready to receive them for a while. I don't know if you guys feel like this. I'm in such a vulnerable space in those first few weeks after drafting.
Oh, yeah.
Like I can't hear a word against it. It was perfect.
And baby.
Like I'm not receptive to feedback. And then with more time, then I start to get excited about revising. But
I feel when you get those initial comments, like it even takes a couple of days to just, you read the comments and you just let them go because it's kind of like, Oh, you said that about what?
Yeah. No, totally.
Hardest for me was when my editor sent back my first draft, like the first edits, you know, and she did it. She would print it out and mail it to me. And so then I would have the hard copy with her red pen as she's like writing.
That goes back to like school, you know, like elementary right? school with the red marks all
the
over.
Red.
Ooh, that's tough. Yeah, that's tough.
Like luckily we Christy and I, when we edit, well, when we do the critiques, we send a chapter by chapter.
Oh, nice.
We write a chapter and then we send, and then we get feedback and then send it back. So we read like I think multiple drafts of of our stories, like between the and then yeah, at the end we do like a full, like the full read.
We found that it was just like easier to get motivated to write, because if you send a chapter, it's like, oh, I accomplished something, and then you get to the blank page again. But it's okay, it all works out.
Everyone does it differently, and that's what's nice. Yeah, you have to find
whatever works. Absolutely. No, I agree. So what do you think, as a debut author, is the one thing that you've done so far as a writer that has helped you the most?
I've tried to treat writing like a job, and I think that's been really helpful for me. I saw it as a hobby for a really long time, and I think it's great to think of it as a hobby. I thought of it as a creative outlet. Once I knew the book was coming out, I have switched to thinking of it as a job, because now it is. And I think that helps with, I feel a little bit more resilient to bad reviews and to critique. Like, I feel a little bit more, I don't know. I think I'm able to have a little bit of professional separation now, which is something I have to do in my day job. So maybe it's just kind of sunk into this too. But like being able to think of it as, this is a book like any other book that comes out, and some people like it and some people don't. I've liked books and not liked books, and that's okay. Like it's something I did pour my heart and soul into, but now that it's out, it's not fully mine anymore, and that's okay. And you know, now I'm contracted to write book two. I've got deadlines to meet, and it's like, I want to treat it like a professional. And I think that's kind of helped me separate my, you know, like my personal attachment to my story and to my writing a little bit.
That's so healthy. Oh my gosh. Like,
I'm not saying I do it perfectly.
No, but it's like so good, because it's such a hard thing to come to. Like, I mean, to the point where you can, I don't know if you'll ever read your reviews or whatever. And then a lot of authors choose not to, but to be able to get to that place where you say like, it's written, it's out there, and there's going to be good and bad. And it's so true, because we've all read books that we said like, eh, and we've all read books that we gushed over. So good for you. And treating it like a profession, very nice, very nice. Because I find like a lot of creatives, we have that problem, right? Like we're all creative, but when it comes to finance or anything like that, it's kind of like a little harder to do. So good for you. So happy for you. That's very
I'm trying. I mean, it's still a work in progress, but I'm trying. I think it's helped me at least like process, especially debut year.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Fantastic. Okay. So thank you so much, Nina, for answering all those questions and giving us some insight into your writing and your debut book and everything. We're going to move on to what we call a get to know you better section, or the speed round questions. And they're very easy. And you can basically say as little or as much as you'd like. And it's just for people to get to know you better, aside from being a writer.
Okay.
Are you ready? Yeah. Okay, good. The first one is, if you could live anywhere, would you stay where you are now, or would you move to a different place?
I would stay here. So I just moved back to Houston a couple months ago. And I've been trying to get back to my hometown for a while. So all my family's here. I love Houston. It's where I grew up. So I'm still like super over the moon to be back.
Fantastic. I love that.
It's beautiful too.
Yeah. I know. Would you rather ask permission or beg for forgiveness?
Oh, beg forgiveness.
Yeah, I think that you get places in the world faster that way. So
yes,
yeah.
You do.
If you are binge watching a series, is it most likely a drama, a rom-com, a mystery, a comedy?
It's probably a silly reality show.
Oh, like what?
Love is Blind is my personal favorite. I love that. I also have been watching Sister Wives, which is kind of a, I just got back into this because I don't know if you guys, I could talk about this for too long, but it's about a polygamous couple, or it's about, I think he has four wives, but like they've all been leaving him this season. So it's fascinating seeing those dynamics play out. Like it's been so interesting. So yeah, I love reality television. I'll watch the Kardashians too. I've never gotten into Real Housewives, but I'm very tempted. But I love a good reality show.
That's very cool. Is there a food that you refuse to eat it?
Oh, Okay, so I'm actually not a huge cheese person. So I will eat cheese if it's on pizza, like if it's melted, and I'll eat it in a quesadilla or something, but I won't eat like a chunk of cheese. Like when I see those cheese boards and stuff, like I can't just like bite into cheese.
It's so funny because
I love cheese.
I know you love cheese, but
I know it's a weird take. Like I think most people are like, that's strange, but.
But it's weird. Like, I feel like
it's weird that I love cheese. Like,
no, like,
I think it's a very.
But I feel like the charcuterie boards that are coming out are like leading people to say more because you're the second person that I've heard that from. Oh, and right. I had never heard it before. So I wonder if, like, you know, like all the charcuterie boards are coming out, people are saying, not for me, not so much, yeah. But I love it. If money weren't an issue, is there a passion that you'd love to follow?
I mean, I'd probably be writing full time. I love it so much. So yeah, I think if I, that's probably what I would do and travel more. I love traveling. Mm. So I think I would just be like on the road with my laptop, you know.
That sounds like the best life actually.
Right? That would be like my dream job right there. Yeah. Being able to travel around and write at the same time.
Exactly. I think about it all the time. I'm like, can I quit my job and just move to Scotland for 3 months? Like, like
if you promise to write books about Scotland, like you're just like, yeah, absolutely, anytime.
The tax write-off, I think.
Oh,
I
yeah, there you go.
It really is, yeah. As long as it's work-related.
Right? It's all good to me, yeah, absolutely. Do you consider yourself a risk-taker or a risk-averse?
I'm pretty risk-averse. So I don't take a ton of risks. It's actually something I want to be better about. Like, I do think I want to, you know, take some more calculated risks in life, but I've always been a rule follower. Like, I never got in trouble. Like, but, I still kind of am wired that way.
And I like the fact you said calculated risk.
Yeah, I can't take a real risk.
That's real.
That's right. It's like getting in good trouble. That's okay. Yes. Which season fits your personality best?
Oh, I think spring. I just like come alive in spring. I hate the cold. I hate winter. So like as soon as it starts to warm up, I feel like I'm a new person. I just feel like there's something about spring that I just love. Like there's new life, there's new flowers, there's new, you know, all of that. So that's, I feel like that. I feel like spring.
I love it. Can you play a musical instrument?
No. I took like 7 years of piano lessons and none of it stuck. Like I was like actively resisting each lesson. I hated it. I just, my brain isn't very wired musically. So I really struggled with it, but I do enjoy music. Like I enjoy when other people play, but I can't play anything.
Yeah. I totally get you for the piano lessons. That's so hard. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much procrastinating do you do?
I'm like a 7. I procrastinate quite a bit. I like kind of, I didn't always, and now I just kind of wait till the day before things are due to send them in, which is a huge mistake and I don't recommend it, but yeah.
I feel like a huge part of procrastination though is like actually thinking about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's all like it's prepping in your head. That's what I tell myself anyways, because I'm more like a 9, but it's okay. I really feel like when you're procrastinating, you're actually thinking about it in your head. So, and the last question, which is like, oh my gosh, it's like so intellectual, but is your bed made right now?
Oh no. It never is, really. I mean, I will like toss the covers up.
So that's made.
It's never like.
Beds are made to be inside. Like it's made to be in the bed, not like looking at it. Like, no.
Yeah.
With the book.
I know. And it's always, you know, like the bed is always a problem for me too, because like I do like you, like I put the covers back, but then you know that like in 12 hours, it's just going to be a mess again. So like, what's the use?
Yeah, it's hard for me to be motivated.
Exactly. Thank you so much for answering those. We really appreciate it.
Can you tell us what you're working on now? I know you have the edits that you're doing, but is there another story that's kind of percolating or that you're going to be writing?
There is. There's what I hope will be book 3, but I don't know yet because I'm not contracted for anything past book 2. So we'll see. But I do have an idea that I still probably can't share anything about, but I am excited about it and kind of in that brainstorming outline phase.
Nice.
With it. So we'll see where it goes.
So is it going to be connected to the current characters or is it something like the standalone? Where
it would be a standalone. Okay. Yeah. There are a couple characters in book 1 I would love to revisit one day. And I've been getting some questions about, and I would love to go back to them at some point, but I think right now book 2 is a standalone. I think book 3 would also be a standalone.
Yeah. I really love your characters. And so I would definitely love to see them some more, like maybe as side characters and, but yeah, you made a beautiful world. So yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm sure the other worlds will be just as nice.
Absolutely true. And you're sticking to the romance jar for the third books as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm going to be writing romance for a while. I do have this idea for a murder mystery, but I don't know how to write a mystery. So we'll save that for one day in the future.
So is there going to be like romance in the murder mystery?
I would want there to be, I think. It would maybe be a bit of a mashup, like a cross-genre romance-try at the same time.
Oh, maybe we're totally there murder for that. Or something as they're falling in love.
Yeah.
Kind of totally creepy, there for that. Will it work? Absolutely. You let us know, email when that goes through.
Yes. Everyone just go to her Amazon page and click follow so you know whenever anything comes out.
That's right. Agreed.
So speaking of, where can people find you on?
Sure. So I'm at Nkumar Wright on Instagram and Threads and what else is out there now. I mean, I'm still on Twitter, but really just for updates. I am on TikTok, but I barely post. But if you want to follow me there, that's cool.
We have something very special next for you from Naina.
That's right.
Yeah. So I am going to go ahead and read the back of the book. So Meghna Raman defied her parents' wishes and followed her life's passion, becoming a theater teacher and an aspiring playwright. When she discovers that her beloved writing partner, best friend, and secret crush, Seth, is engaged and not to her, she realizes that he's about to become the one that got away. Even worse, he's asked her to be his best man. And even worse than that, she's agreed. Determined to move on, Meghna agrees to let her parents introduce her to a potential match. Maybe she could marry the engineer that her parents still wish she'd become. Grumpy engineer Karthik Murthy has seen enough of his parents' relationship to know that marriage is not for him. To make his mother happy, though, he's agreed to her matchmaking attempts, never dreaming that he would meet someone as vibrant as Meghna. He can't offer her anything real, but a fake engagement might help her soothe the sting of planning Seth's wedding festivities and also help Karthik avoid the absurd number of setups his mother has planned for him. As the two find common ground, grow protective of each other's hearts, and start to fall for the traits they originally thought they hated, an undeniable chemistry emerges. But soon their expectations and insecurities threaten something that's become a lot more real than they'd planned.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. And all the tropes that are in there that we absolutely love, and we don't want to do any spoilers, but those are just some of the tropes that are in the book that we absolutely love too. So thank you so much. This was great. We had a great time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was so fun.
Yeah. You know what? If I didn't say it before, I'm going to say it again. This book is fabulous, everyone. Fabulous. And so that's what I'm going to do after we finish this interview, is to go finish the book, because it's so good. I just want to thank everyone for joining us today. And if you like these videos, please like and subscribe and hit the notification bell. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We had so much fun. And I hope that when the next book comes out and then book after that, you come back again and tell us all about it, please.
Thank you so much.